fffp.co.uk.
I'm a fly jack, keep your hands off of my stack.
Rift Accounting. The accountants of tomorrow, today. Riftaccounting.com.
Jobs in Kent.com.
Where do businesses in Kent go to do business? Supplymybusiness.co.uk. Get 12 months membership for the price of 10 when you join today. Supplymybusiness.co.uk.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show on Tuesday, June the 14th, with me, Paul Andrews, and the famous Joe Dodds. That was a bit of ELO there, Mr. Blue Sky. We've still got the tweets coming in. We've still got loads of emails. We've still got loads of things to cover. I'm going to read a fairly long email, but I want you to kind of bear with me on this because it's important. And it says, Paul, our charity is in its infancy stage. I founded it after my son, Daniel Wiltshire, aged 39 years old, tragically died in 2014. There was no warning. Daniel woke up, made a cup of tea, got back into bed, and then suffered a massive brain hemorrhage. It was our experience at St. Thomas's Hospital, where Dan was taken, that led to starting the charity. Once you've gone through the experience as we did, and that you understand the importance of organ donation, hence, we aim to educate and encourage people to say, and they've got a campaign and their tag is say so and sign up. They say it's vital that while we're here, alive and well, that we inform our next of kin of our wishes. Otherwise, they have to make a decision when they're in a devastating place. Daniel was well known in Maidstone. He worked with me in Harper's Gift and Coffee Shop. He was an actor and performed with the Changeling Theatre Company for years. His biggest love was Shakespeare, so I guess they're having a great time in heaven celebrating Shakespeare's 400th birthday. What a party they must be having. We held a ball last year for Dan's 40th, a great success, and we raised £8,000. Everyone was given a say-so and sign-up paddle, and we hope they all registered. Our ball this year is again a Shakespeare theme. It's a Midsummer Night's Ball. However, our ticket sales have been really affected by me being hospitalised for 5 weeks in April and May. With 3 weeks to go, we need as much help as we can get, so I'd really appreciate any support that your listeners could give us. It's going to be a cracking night with Renfield the Butler. Renfield the Butler is our entertainer and a cabaret for the night. He's not well advertised. People who have seen him, though, rave about him. But to others, he's a hard sell because they haven't heard of him. But he's absolutely amazing. The date of the event is June the 25th, so it's not far. June the 25th, and it's taking place at the Great Danes Hotel Maidstone, or the Mercure Maidstone, or whatever it's called this week. But it's the Great Danes at Hollingbourne. And the theme is A Midsummer Night's Dream. The dress code is Glittering Ball, and the tickets are £70 a person, and that includes a three-course meal, and it's a gourmet meal as well. It's a top-class meal, and there's a five-star cabaret from John Vine and Ryan Field the Butler. You can find out more about all of this by going to the charity website, which is the Daniel Wiltshire Foundation.com. Daniel Wiltshire, as spelled as in the county, Wiltshire.com. You can email tickets to the lady that's written this, who is Annie Wiltshire at hotmail.com, or you can go to her Facebook page, which is Annie Wiltshire and Danny Wiltshire, or you can ring the office on Maidstone, which is 01622 736 221, or you can book your tickets directly via Eventbrite, and it's eventbrite.co.uk/A Midsummer Night's Dream Charity Ball. So do support that, please. It's a fantastic event and a fantastic cause. And if you can't support the event, at least say so and sign up and register for organ donation. Thank you, Joe.
Okay. I'm now thinking I should have found a more appropriate one to follow.
While you're doing that, shall I read a couple of tweets?
Yeah, go on, do that.
which are completely inappropriate also, but that's the way of Twitter. We've had Expect Solutions, and they say, hi, Vanilla Web. Hi, Business Bunker. We are an independent IT consultancy in London, and we offer network, voice, and data center solutions. Could we have a shout out, please, and have a great day? So there you go. You can follow them on the Twitter at Expect Tweets. Is their Twitter handle? Expect Tweets. We've also, oh, I like this. We both got the coughs at the moment, haven't we? I don't know what all that's
it
about.
It feels like there's some pollen or something that's just come in.
I think you're probably right. We've probably got a waft of pollen come through the window or something. Boozy udders. Would you believe? Don't
she
titter.
Giggling, yes.
Don't titter. Thank you. Boozy udders. Vanilla Web, we're on the lookout for stockists for our locally made, homemade, alcoholic cocktail ice cream.
Oh, sounds lovely, what? Doesn't it? You wouldn't appreciate
what?
It. But...
No. And they say, thank you, Business Bunker. So give Boozy Udders, that's Udders, as in cow udders, Boozy Udders, and that's their Twitter handle, Boozy Udders, on the Twitter, a follow, and find out about their locally homemade alcoholic cocktail ice cream and becoming a stockist. Blimey.
Great, isn't it?
Mm.
Well, sort of on that theme then, there's a curry and beer networking on the 14th of July at the Rajmoni, is that how you pronounce it, in Bromley.
The Bajrari.
What?
Bajrari, isn't it?
Rajmoni.
Oh, Rajmoni, is it? Okay.
I don't think it's whatever you just said. 6:30 in the evening at, as I said, the Rajmoni in Bromley.
The where?
I've said it a few times now. The curry and beer night. Apparently, it went. The last one went well, and the next one will be. Hang on, what's the date today? Is it today? 14th.
Yeah.
Oh, it's today. It's tonight.
Yeah, it's this evening.
Oh no, it's July. You're right. It's June today, isn't it?
Somebody's on the ball, Dan. Yeah, thank you.
What am I like? So yes, 14th.
What
of
would
July.
You care? You never go to any of them.
No, exactly.
That's why you never go to them.
You get the dates wrong.
You got the dates wrong. I'm away that year.
Exactly. But if you go to Cain and Beer, that's Cain and Beer.com/curry-and-beer, then you can find out more about it and make sure we've got the right day and the right place.
Fantastic. Thank you. Fruitworks have been on again because they're giving it some stick today. That's because they're the show sponsors today. That's why they're giving it stick.
Right.
We're expanding our co-working space in Canterbury Kent. May we have a shout out, please, Vanilla Web and Joe? Yes, you can. There you go. And they've got some lovely photographs of the new space, what Jamie's been building for us. So thank you for that. And Fruit Bowl Media, shout out for our web design agency in Canterbury. They're based at Fruitworks, designing beautiful, responsive websites. Thank you.
I'm going to have to pop by and have a look, as I clearly don't go to any of the events held there. Mm. I'll have to make a special trip.
Absolutely. Absolutely. do you know what? I think we'll... talk to our next guest now. What
okay.
do you think?
Yeah, sounds like a good plan.
If I could stop coughing and having to clear my throat. You're right. I think we've suddenly have a pollen infestation or something. It's suddenly got all croaky around here. Yeah. But it's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the Business Bunker Show, although it was quite some time ago that you were last on, Daniel. Daniel Sangiuseppe, who is one of the owners of a chain of hotels down here on the South Coast, Castlewood Hotels. Daniel, welcome back to the Business Bunker Show. Absolute pleasure to see you again. Your lot did well last night at UEFA.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for having me again.
Pleasure.
Yeah,
pleasure.
Happy with last night's result.
Thanks. It was a good result, that. Mm. Yeah. Dan's of the Italian persuasion, and Italy had a very good result against Belgium last night.
Have to follow Dad's team, I'm afraid.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the law, isn't it? It's the same with my kids. Yeah. You follow who I tell you you're going to follow. Welcome onto the show. Give us a bit of background to your business, Dan. It's a family business, and you own, as I say, a chain of hotels on the south coast, or in the southeast of England, at least.
Yeah, it's a small family-run business. My parents started it off 22 years ago now.
Oh, okay.
Castlewood Hotels is the name of the group, but it's the three individual hotels, which people will know them individually. The first one was the Burlington Hotel in Folkestone, here in Kent, here in Shepway. We have the Best Western Abbots Barton Hotel in Canterbury. And then we have a third hotel, also Best Western, which is outside of Kent. It's in Eastbourne. It's called the York House Hotel.
We don't talk about that. No. It's foreign, that.
Across the border.
Yeah, absolutely. I've never been to the York House. I have been to both the Burlington and quite frequently the Abbots Barton, because I have loads of things that happen in Canterbury, so I go there quite frequently. They're lovely hotels, especially the Burlington. It's in a lovely position, isn't it? Just looking out over the English Channel there. Gorgeous thing. So... were your family always in the hotel business, or how did it come about in the first place? You did 22 years, you say?
22 years since we first bought the Burlington. Mm. And Mum and Dad do have a hotel background, in so much as Dad's Italian, as I mentioned. Mum's actually Spanish. Mm. They both moved over to England in the 70s,
right.
Looking for a better life. Mm. And the hotel business was what most foreigners used to do to come and get somewhere to live, work and learn the language.
Yeah.
And they in London is where they started off working in different hotels, and that's how they actually met.
Right, okay.
And I think, as is quite common with people who work in the hotel industry, although you hate it whilst you're working in it, because it is tough, you know, the unsociable
Absolutely.
Hours,
yeah.
the low pay and all the rest of it, generally speaking.
And customers can be a pain as well.
As well, dealing with customers. It does have that stigma to it. It is something which hospitality, on the whole, it gets in your blood, and people who are in it tend to stick with it for life.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, mum and dad's dream to always have their own hotel, really.
And that's not an easy thing to achieve in this country, is it? Because we all know the price of property and stuff like that. And the Burlington, which was the first hotel in the group, is a gorgeous, gorgeous place. I mean, it's a lovely building, you know, just in and of itself, apart from the fact that you operate it as a lovely hotel, but just the building itself is gorgeous.
Beautiful old Victorian Edwardian building, built in 1893. So a lot of heritage, a lot of history and character to the building, which is a bit of a headache when it comes to the repairs and maintenance
Absolutely.
Side of things. But that's what stands us apart to sort of more new build hotels, which don't really have that soul, if you like. And people, especially foreign visitors, that's what they like to come and see when they stay with us. But as you say, I think it wasn't easy. Dad did, when I was born, did come out of the hotel business. And that's where he was able to sort of, in importing and exporting, actually, that's where he was able to start up separate business.
Right.
And that's what enabled him ultimately to be able to purchase the Burlington when it came on the market in 94.
Right. And was it operated as a hotel when he bought it?
The Burlington's been operated as a hotel ever since it was built in 1893.
So was it actually built as a hotel?
Correct.
Ah, okay, right.
For
okay.
those that know on the Lees over in Folkestone, you know, you've got the Burlington, you've got the Grand and the Metropole.
Yeah.
The Burlington came first, and it was actually built as a 4-star at the time, but purpose-built hotel.
Mm.
That's interesting, because it's further off the Lees than the other two. Is that because the roads were different in those days, you think?
Bear in mind, in those days, the roads were more tracks for horse-drawn carriages and what have you. Yeah, it was before cars even. It was totally different. But I believe that it was land, you know, where the Grand and the Metropole on the Lees, it was all just the Lees, just land, really. And the Burlington was the first building that was designed for, at the time, it was the Londoners who used to come down and
the DFTs. vacate
what is today, we associate London, Brighton as London by the Sea.
Yeah.
Well, back then it was Folkestone. Really,
yeah, and Sandgate and all along that coast was really, really glamorous and upmarket and Riviera styled.
Yes.
Fantastic. Yeah. And, I mean, presumably Papa San Giuseppe bought the hotel because of the hotel. Did you have any association with Folkestone before that?
None at all. We were originally living in southwest London.
Right.
And we only knew Folkestone, as many people do, through crossing to catch back then the hovercraft.
Yeah.
Or the ferry.
Or the rowing boat, a kayak. Yeah.
So we didn't really know too much about it. I think my father had been and stopped here once with somebody else who he knew, and he happened to see the beach back then. And it was only he got notified of the Burlington coming on the market through, you know, the commercial estate agents at the time. And when he arranged a visit to come and actually have a look at it, it was a gorgeous sunny day. And
that was lucky.
Especially when you're on the Lees. And I think the potential of that, the Eurotunnel was just opening.
Right. Yes. Okay.
And the potential of what there was to offer was what really sold it to them, and the building itself. It was very run down. It had literally been badly run for quite a while.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of work to do. But, you know, in particular, my mum, this is where she comes in. She has the vision, the creative foresight to see that something could be restored to its former glory days.
Yeah.
And Dad had the business head on to actually say, yeah, well, I think we can make this work.
Mm.
So that's it. So we literally, the whole family moved in into the hotel. We actually lived in the hotel.
Right.
And
okay.
And that's how we started slowly refurbishing it from within, one floor at a time.
Right.
And just running it operationally as a hotel, whilst we were refurbishing it and getting up to a good 3-star standard.
So kind of labour of love, really.
Very much. A lot of blood, sweat and tears, in particular from mum and dad at the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine. Well, it's certainly a gorgeous hotel now. I haven't been there for a little while, and it must have been 2 years ago now, because I think the last time I came was in the 20th anniversary celebration. Yeah. So that would have been 2 years ago. Blimey.
Two years in August.
Quickly. Yeah.
I think I've been there since then. Yeah. So I do get out occasionally.
I must have been there since then, because I have been there, and it's a lovely, lovely building. And I know, funnily enough, I live in an Edwardian house as well, not on the same scale as your hotel, obviously, but I know what you mean about refurbishing things like that. It's not the easiest thing in the world to do, because the Edwardians didn't do, you know, standard building regulations back in the day.
So do you have all that? Is it a listed building?
It is grade two listed building.
Yeah. So you've got all of that extra challenge.
That has its challenges as well. But yeah, in particular at the moment, we are in the midst of a major refurbishment.
Right.
We're sort of 18 months in now. We've done most of the bedrooms, the entrance, the foyer as you come in. So we're just finishing off the remaining bedrooms. And then the last project, which we're going to be working on, is the Baytree Restaurant and Bar downstairs.
Okay. Right.
Which, again, used to be very famous back in the 60s and 70s, when the equivalent of what is today celebrity chefs and what have you.
Yeah.
They did have one back then, and they used to hold quite important national events,
right?
Like Salon Culinaire and what have you at the at the hotel. So, yeah, we would like to really refurbish the Baytree bar and restaurant to open it for the locals as well as the hotel.
Absolutely.
Because there is a big movement, regeneration going on around the Shepway, the Folkestone area. Yeah. In fact, the whole East Kent coast at the moment, it's a really good place.
It's funny you should say that. And before we move on and talk a little bit about your other hotels, which I want to do, I want to kind of finish off on that, because I was I staged an event, I can't even remember what it was, about 8 or 9 months ago at a quarter deck in a creative quarter in Folkestone. And
Quarterhouse,
yeah. And I was talking to some chap there, and he went, "This is really funky and really nice. It's just a shame about the rest of Folkestone." And I went, "Why is that a shame?" And he went, "Well, because some of it's a bit of a dump." And I went, "That's brilliant." And he went, "Why?" I said, "Well, because it's still cheap enough for you to buy it in the full knowledge that it's all being regenerated." And he went, "Oh, never thought of that." And I mean, because Folkestone as a place has some gorgeous buildings, those big kind of Regency squares and all the rest of it, on the edge of where your lovely hotel is. You know, there's some gorgeous buildings there, and Folkestone, like Hastings and a lot of other seaside towns around the south coast, went into a period of decline, and people moved out and moved away, and all of that is changing again. You know,
for the Harbour Arm, that's so popular now, isn't
absolutely
it?
And I don't know where we are with the plan, but Roger has got various plans for building a marina that are sometimes on and sometimes off at the moment. But you know, there is a lot of money being spent in Folkestone, and it is being regenerated at a fast pace. And one of the big things that has made such a difference to the whole of that end of Kent is high-speed rail. It's made a massive difference. It's made it reachable.
Yeah. Definitely.
And I just wanted to ask you, Daniel, about the Burlington from a clientele point of view. Where's your biggest... you mentioned that you want to do things for local people and make it a dining experience, and I get that. But in terms of room occupation, which I guess is the main focus of the business...
That's the bread and butter.
Yeah. Is it tourism? Is it people passing through on the ferries and tunnel? What's the makeup of it?
The accommodation side of the business, which, as we said, is the bread and butter, really. 90% of our clientele is what we call leisure.
Right.
Now, that could be people who are attending functions, because we do host a number of functions, be it weddings, be it meetings, other events, parties, Christmas parties, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Many times you get guests who are staying over because of those events. But the people which are there for short breaks, the transient people who are there just to catch a ferry or to go on the tunnel, both sides, incoming as well as outgoing.
Yep.
All of those people are roughly leisure guests, and they are about 90%. 10% is corporate at the moment. 10 to 20%, not much more than 20% is corporate clientele.
Okay.
I think in the last few years, in particular, maybe that's been because of the standard of the hotel. We've been an unbranded, middle of the road, 3-star property. I think now with the refurbishment going on, we're starting to see a difference now, whereby we're going more up towards that 4-star standard.
Right.
We're actually looking, we have been approved subject to inspection to get into a brand which is Best Western. I mentioned our other two hotels are Best Western already. And with the Burlington, we are looking to come into Best Western as well, as one of their sub brands called Best Western Plus.
Okay.
So that's more like your sort of four star hotel standard.
Can I ask you about stars? Because there are two or three different schemes that you see occasionally, you know, like the AA have their own scheme, and there's one with roses on it and stuff like that. But generally, Hotels have two, three, one, well, I guess one to five. Who actually awards those stars, and are they, is there some kind of troop of people that wanders around with a clipboard going, yeah, could be four, could be five?
Yeah, there is an official accreditation system, and there are two bodies which currently in the UK which can award the stars, and that's from not just hotels, but any guest accommodation. There's different categories of accommodation, self-catering, fully serviced hotels such as ours, which have night porter service and 24-hour room service, for example. They are the AA, as you mentioned. That's one board. And the other one is basically Visit Britain, the old tourist board.
Right, okay.
Quality and Tourism.
Yep.
So they are the two. They're meant to use the same sort of standards.
Yep.
So technically speaking, whether you get assessed by the AA or Quality and Tourism, if you're a three-star in one, you'll be a three-star in the other.
Yep.
There shouldn't be much difference between the two.
Okay.
What there are differences is on some of their accreditations with regards to the accolades.
Yeah.
So the AA, additionally to having a four-star hotel or a three-star hotel, they have what they call a four-star, they have red stars. So those are for the top hotels,
right,
who are a four-star, who are almost a five-star. They have rosettes for the restaurants, for example.
Right.
So Quality and Tourism don't have red stars. They have what's called a three-star or a four-star silver award or a gold award.
Right.
And they have an award. They don't have rosettes for restaurants. They have a breakfast award, for example. So they've got a few little differences with the accolades.
Right.
But as far as the basic star ratings are concerned with the gradings of the accommodation, they're a standard.
Okay.
But it's an interesting subject, but conversation. It's a big one about it, because most people nowadays, the star ratings is so fickle that people actually have more trust in star ratings from review sites as opposed to the official ones.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
And that's a good point that you raise. We're talking TripAdvisor and similar.
Yes.
Now, I've heard some horror stories, of course, from owners of various properties, because, of course,
anyone can say anything.
And, you know, you've got to be careful.
To a degree.
Yeah.
There is a line where if you do cross the line as a pundit sort of leaving a review, TripAdvisor will remove it if you're saying something defamatory or basically not true.
Yeah.
And as an accommodation provider, we have the right to reply to these reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we can also report abuse. So we can also report blackmail, which does happen as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
People sort of saying, oh, you know, I'm not happy with this. If you don't give me a free upgrade or a free meal, I'm going to leave a bad review type scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can report that as a potential threat of blackmail, and TripAdvisor will take it off in advance. And likewise, if we reply slagging them off, as it were, and TripAdvisor likewise will not take our review down, our response down.
It's one of those balances, isn't it, that if people abuse it from either side, if people abuse it, it becomes worthless, and that doesn't suit anybody. So I guess from TripAdvisor's point of view, they have to try and police this properly, otherwise their whole service becomes pointless.
It's difficult for them to police when the amount of reviews. I remember going to a conference, and there was a lady from TripAdvisor there, and she gave us the statistics. I'm not going to try and make them up. But they were
92,000. They were
the amount of reviews being left per minute worldwide. I'm talking about is huge. So to police it all is
really
almost impossible.
Yeah.
But within reason, they try and do a good job. And we endorse it. You know, we really do.
Yeah.
Encourage our customers to leave reviews.
Yeah.
We use it as an internal mechanism to try and almost as for goals as well. We want to be in the top
three. Yeah, you learn lessons from it, don't you?
And you take certain things with a pinch, so everybody can have a bad day.
Of course,
where things don't go 100%.
Yeah.
But on the whole, if you've got a string of reviews over the course of a month or two, and constantly they're all saying complaints about the beds being too hard or no hot water, then, not being funny, but you've got something has to be wrong
for a
number of people to mention the same thing. So we can almost use it as a bit of a mystery shopper type scenario, in the olden days.
And we do
listen, and we do act upon people's reviews.
And I think that's brilliant, because you're actually using it for the entire point that it's there, isn't it? That you're getting feedback here that says, you know what, I need to address this. And it's reasonable. You know, they might go over the top a little bit about, you know, well, the bed was unsleepable or something, when in fact it was just a little bit lumpy. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's useful from that point of view, as long as people don't abuse
it.
It's the whole thing about welcoming complaints, because unless you get told what's wrong, you can't do anything about it, and you'd much rather people tell you and you resolve it and then potentially make them into more supportive customers, then actually then never come back again.
Correct.
Many years ago, one of the training things I used to do was customer service. And I used to quite often say that something going wrong is a better opportunity than everything going right, because you have the opportunity to put it right with style.
Yes.
If you put right a complaint with style, you get far more kudos than if you just deliver something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you deliver something, people expect it, and they go, yeah, well, it's a 4-star hotel. What do you expect?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. If it goes wrong and you go, I'm really sorry about that, have a bunch of flowers or anything, you know, almost, as long as you treat people humanely, they'll go, do you know what? We got there and the bed was a little bit lumpy, but they were so lovely about it. They did this and they did that. Far more valuable than just delivering the service.
Well, I think the research into that basically shows that those guests who experience something negative initially, who you're able to then turn it around, those guests will actually become more loyal,
they're
ambassadors almost to the brand, as it were,
Absolutely.
Than people who maybe just stay with you once as a one-off and won't talk to you, whereas those who have a good experience, they'll tell all their friends. And so it's very important to try. That customer retention is so vital nowadays, building up loyalty, as opposed to just getting new people all the time.
Hotels, it's so key as well, and that whole sort of home from home thing, isn't it, about that building relationships. I mean, I remember working somewhere and staying in a hotel for like 12 weeks, and the hotel was pretty dire. There wasn't a big budget, but the people were just amazing. And, you know, because I was there so much, we got to know each other and everything, and it made such a massive difference. And actually, I'd sort of forgot the fact that the hotel was a bit rubbish because the people were great. But, you know, you tend to, when you're going to the same place again and again, you just stay at the places where you know. I remember going to stay actually in a bed and breakfast up in York for Ascot, and within, I don't know, 2 hours of being there, I was in the flat of the people who owned it was a big bed and breakfast, nursing their baby, watching telly with them, everything else. And I was thinking, how did that happen? But they were such nice people. And I don't know how I ended up in the conversation to the point where they invited me in for a cup of tea, but they did. And it's like, you know, if I ever went back to York and needed to stay, you know,
That's where you'd go. And that's a typical scenario of exactly that, people having a good experience, and they will trying to go back somewhere if they can. It's that comfort element.
A funny story from years and years ago, back late 70s, early 80s. I was working for a US corporation, and I was dispatched to work in Paris for a number of weeks. And I stayed actually in the Hotel California, would you believe, on the Champs-Élysées. But I was working in La Défense, and I stayed there for about 5 weeks in a hotel. And then I finished the project I was doing and I came home. And the weekend I came home, my parents said, oh, we've got you tickets to some ball that we're going to for some charity ball. Anyway, we went along and there was a raffle. And my dad won first prize in the raffle, which was a weekend for two in Paris. Okay. But my dad's never been abroad in his life, and he isn't about to start now because it's all full of foreigners and he wasn't having any of that. So he said, you can have the tickets. And the tickets were for the next weekend in the Hotel California on the Champs-Élysées, right? So my wife at the time was going, well, we've got to go. And I just spent 6 weeks staying there. She said, yes, but I haven't. So we trundled all the way back out there. And then when we got there, we realised why they were in this prize. It was All Saints weekend and everything was closed. And we got to the hotel and they went, well, the restaurant's not open. There's no food. There's nothing. And they went, but as it's you, here's the key to the kitchen. Make your own.
Brilliant.
Yeah, good stuff. So, Dan, the Burlington, you got, as a family, you got that up and running, blood, sweat and tears, you made it work. Where do we go from there? Where's the story from there?
So with the Burlington, as we say, as I said before, it's at the moment trying to get it into that Best Western Plus for next year, finishing the refurbishment and going towards that 4-star market in line with the quality that Folkestone is going down, really, with everything that's happening in Folkestone. Then the other project going on behind the scenes, which actually is a bit more of a headache, is the Abbas Barton in Canterbury.
Right.
And that
was
hotel,
that your second hotel?
That was the second one. Yeah, we bought that in 98.
Right.
So, 18 years now.
I shall wait for my invite to the 20th
anniversary. Yep, that'll be coming in a couple of years. And what's happening with the Abbas? I mentioned this last time
I came on the show.
That,
yeah.
We had plans there to expand the property.
It was a spa and...
So there's more conference and banqueting facilities, more bedrooms, and a leisure facility like a spa. That's what the plan always was. So some work has been done in the last 2 years. Not as much as I would have liked to have done, unfortunately, for a number of reasons. reasons, which I won't go into now and bore everybody. But we have progressed on building, I'll use a building term, a shell and core of of the original of an annex building at the back of the hotel, which is for 24 new bedrooms.
Right, okay.
And excuse me, and a function room and function bar to be able to accommodate up to 200 people. So at the moment that has physically built, but it's just like an empty building. You can see all the brickwork. We're at the stage now of basically looking at the interiors, the layouts of the bedrooms, the sourcing of the air conditioning, the plumbing, the electrics, and then the fitting out of the furniture, the second fixing as they call it. So all of that is very much on the way. I can't commit to any time frames because it's all subject to contractors, finance, and the usual bits and pieces.
Tell me about it. I have great sympathy for you with builders, Daniel, especially in Canterbury.
So we have that going on one side, and on the other side, on another part of another wing of the hotel, there is some major groundworks going on at the moment. It looks like a bunker has been built at the back of the hotel in the car park, because it's underground, and that's where the spa is going to be. So they are in the midst of actually, so they've dug it all out, they're pouring concrete, and there's big reinforced concrete walls and toes going in as we speak, and columns, and there'll be a big decking for the car park.
He's got all the terminology, hasn't he?
He has.
I could be an engineer by the end of this project. I've learned all the words.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking at it, and I know the Abbott Spartan better than any of your hotels because I've got businesses in Canterbury and I do quite a few events and hang out there. Is it a Victorian building as well?
Gothic,
yeah.
1830s.
Right, okay.
1820s, 1830s.
Yeah.
Part of it, the original manor house, the original Abbott Spartan. Then you've got a wing that was added on in the in the 40s, and another one that was added on in the 60s.
Right. Added on quite in keeping with. It doesn't look odd.
It doesn't now. It did look a little bit odd when we bought it originally in 98.
And was it a hotel when you bought it?
It was a hotel when we bought it. It wasn't originally a hotel. It was already a trading hotel.
Yeah.
Scraping the barrel 3-star hotel when we bought it, unbranded. We closed it down for 2 years, gutted it. We did a lot of the work that you can see now, which basically ties it all together. We put this new roof on top to make it look as though it's one building, rearranged the internals so that actually it has a flow to it. Before, you used to have to trance through the restaurant to get to some of the bedrooms, for example. Not very operationally efficient. Did all that work and then opened it up as a Best Western. I say we do buy into this branding, and Best Western for us as a brand, albeit an American brand, but it works well for our model of hotels.
Okay, cool. It's interesting listening to you talk, Daniel, and telling us about being in hospitality business, because, of course, you're not really in the hospitality business at all, are you? You're in the project management and building business.
Yes, exactly. I leave the hospitality side to the managers. They're the professionals. Mm-hmm. And exactly, I've become a project manager indirectly with one hat. And then the other hat is trying to support the managers with their day-to-day operations and strategic issues, looking at the budgets and working with mum, dad and my brother.
But I totally get that, you know, as the owner of Fruitworks, on a much, much smaller scale than you guys, you know, we've got this community workspace and we've just quadrupled the space there. And we've become a building company. You know, we're spending all of our time, and my son Jamie, who runs it over there, he's spending all of his time on building work and project work and facilities management, to the point where we're probably going to have to change his role, and he's going to spend most of his time looking after the physical building rather than, you know, the actual workspace that's in there. So I really do get that. I do love the Abbott Spartan, and I have spent a lot of time there, and I've got a cunning plan coming up that we're going to talk about at some point. Probably off air, because we need to negotiate this thing.
This has warned you.
I just kind of put that out there, you know what I mean. So I want to talk about the third hotel in the chain, the York House, over there in Eastbourne.
Outside of Kent.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll let you have that one. So
how did that happen?
That was 2006. Again, we wanted to grow the group, to create this sort of mini group, so that we could have a head office type scenario and use economies of scale to try and manage the hotels more efficiently using our expertise in different areas, supporting the managers. So we were looking for a third hotel. We were actually looking at Bournemouth at the time, and we were looking at a Best Western hotel in Bournemouth. So because we already had the Best Western in Canterbury, then we thought another Best Western would be great. We know how it works. We can maybe add some bits from our knowledge to get the most out of the brand with the contacts we had. So we looked at Bournemouth, and we were very close to getting a Best Western in Bournemouth, but actually somebody else, it was like an auction scenario, someone else outbid us in effect with the hotel in Bournemouth. So we were a bit disappointed, and it was the bank at the time that we were dealing with said to us, oh, well, actually, there's a Best Western in Eastbourne, which is for sale if you're interested. And we said, OK, Eastbourne. My first thought was, Blue Rinse Brigade, cheap bucket and spade, holidays.
But a tad closer for your head office. But
it's been a blessing in disguise. Yeah, definitely. I think Bournemouth, it would have been too much for us to really have a hands-on involvement like we like to have with Bournemouth logistically. So we went to have a look at this place in Eastbourne, and it was a Best Western, as I said. It was an 88-bedroom hotel right on the front, on the Royal Parade, near the pier, and indoor pool as well downstairs. And we thought, actually, do you know what? This, after doing a bit of research and looking at the town and seeing what business there was and where the council were trying to take it from a tourism point of view and a business point of view, we thought, we could make something of the hotel. We needed some work doing to it, and we spent...
And we like projects.
It likes a bit of building.
We like a challenge. I mean, we didn't expect the recession to hit, literally a year after we'd bought the hotel, to be fair. That wasn't planned. So it did make things a bit harder and prolong the refurbishment. But, yeah, we've now got a really nice hotel that we're proud of. Yeah, Mum's done amazing work on the interior design, making that hotel really what it is today. Out of 42 hotels on TripAdvisor in Eastbourne, we are constantly in the top three.
Wow. That's something.
We've turned a corner. We've changed the clientele, improved the quality of the hotel. I mean, it used to be literally just working with lots and lots of groups. It was busy hotel, but with groups which were relatively cheap. You used to walk into the reception and you'd see a line of Zimmer frames and mobility scooters and everybody just in the lounge reading the paper or playing Scrabble, not spending too much behind the bar.
And my kind of place.
Yes.
Grab a granny and all that.
But do you know, we've changed that client. We still work a lot with groups. And in fact, we do still, this isn't discriminating against sort of people who are retired. Because in fact, there's a lot, big market out there, the old Silver Surfers.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And our clientele still is, I would say, in the saga market, the over 50s, predominantly. Mm. But we get a lot more who actually make their own, they don't come on these organized coach tours a lot of the time. They make their own way down, and those that do come in coach tours are coming on a different type of package where they want a bit more freedom to go and do their own itineraries and do what they want, and they want the Wi-Fi, the free Wi-Fi. They all come with their iPads and they all come with their phones. And
Eastbourne is a gentle, it's what I call a gentle seaside town. It's got all the attributes of that Sussex coast without the vibe of Brighton, which is different, and so on. It's a much gentler kind of place.
Cheaper than Brighton as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But it is actually a really nice town, Eastbourne, and you haven't got the candy floss appeal of Hastings just further up. You kind of sit between those two.
I agree. But it's also a university town.
Yeah.
There's a lot of industry down there. There's a marina down there as well. There's some major events like the tennis, like the air show.
Yeah.
So it is a much more a vibrant town than I had that perception of it not being so. But after being there now 10 years, it's a lot more vibrant, and the council are taking it more that way as well. They really want to go up market. They're doing lots of developments in the town centre. So no, we're very happy with Eastbourne that we've managed to survive through the recession, and now that's it. We've now got the three hotels. We're focusing on that. That's our core product.
We don't need one in the middle between.
Well, they're gonna fill in the gaps, don't you?
I'm thinking Best Western. I'm thinking, there's one in Hyde that could do with some refurbishment.
Cool, Daniel. We could talk about this all day because it's a fascinating subject, and what you guys have achieved with your chain of hotels is brilliant, especially under some very difficult circumstances. With the financial crash from 2007 onwards, and making life very difficult, and then you've had all kinds of things thrown at you by governments, like living wages and all those kind of things that make the hospitality industry such a difficult industry to manage. But you've weathered all of that. You're growing as a group, and all power to you. We could talk about it for a long time. Sadly, we're running out of time. I know that each of the hotels has their own website, but I think you've got Castlewood Hotels has a portal.
Castlewoodhotels.com is the website, which has a portal to all three individual websites. Yeah. And I mean, each hotel is actually pretty active on Facebook as well. So try and find, if you want to keep in touch with what's going on locally, events, each hotel's Facebook. Yeah. It's probably the best page to look at.
Yeah, so that's Abbott Spartan, Burlington
Hotel, Hotel and York House. Hotel.
Yeah. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Show. Good luck with your expansion plans and all the work that you're doing. And I know you've worked really hard on this. We look forward to talking to you again sometime in the not too distant future when you can update us on all of this.
I was going to say, hopefully next time I'll have the spa open and everything else open in Canterbury and I can report back on that. And
absolutely. Maybe we'll do the show from the spa.
Maybe.
How about that? That would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah, absolutely. Daniel, thank you so much. Daniel Sanchez of Pia Castlewood Hotels. Cheers. Brilliant. Thank you so much. We're kind of running towards the end of the show, Joe, so we're going to have to be really quick. We're going to go straight into our...
Channel Radio News Update.
We're going to go straight into our FSB News Update for the week. A warm welcome to new members of the FSB, Warren Estate Agents, Home Flair Maidstone, East Kent Rentals, Premier Media and Halcombe. You can follow the FSB on Twitter at FSB Kent and there you can get local news and information.
So, there's a new waste exemption registration service. The Environment Agency has claimed that nearly 10,000 waste exemptions have been registered by business owners in England using the new online registration service that was introduced in March 2016. Firms that handle small quantities of waste or low-risk waste, such as agricultural materials and tyres, can now apply for a waste exemption without charge if they meet limits and conditions, rather than pay an annual fee for an environmental permit. The new online service has replaced the former paper and e-form options to make the registration process easier and quicker. I don't have a link for it, but I'm sure if you Google...
Yeah, basically, what you can do on the Kent Business Radio website, there is a tab at the top of the site which says FSB. And if you go into that tab, all the links are there, all the blogs are there, all the stuff that we read out on this show is accessible via there. There's an employment law and auto-enrolment workshop on the 14th of June. That's today, isn't it? That's this morning, so that's too late. You've missed it.
So I've got Coastal Communities Fund extended. The DCLG has announced that an additional £90 million is to be made available as part of the Coastal Communities Fund. Public, private and voluntary sector organisations such as local enterprise partnerships, private sector companies and social enterprises can bid for funding for projects that support the economic development of coastal communities and directly or indirectly create new jobs or safeguard existing jobs. Applicants will be able to bid for grants of between £50,000 and £4 million over the next 4 years. Bids for the latest round of funding in England close on the 30th of June, while bids for the rest of the UK will open in July 2016.
Cool. Thank you for that. Preparing for Growth. It's an event and is the first in a series of free bespoke seminars that aims to help small and medium-sized businesses and startups in Tunbridge and Morling and the surrounding area to grow and develop their businesses. This is a seminar that covers ways to generate and nurture ideas in order to develop them into a business revenue stream. Experts will offer advice on taking appropriate steps to protect, utilize and market your ideas and to use intangible assets to their full potential. The workshop is taking place on Thursday the 30th of June and it's from 5:30 to 7:30 in the evening and it's taking place at the committee room, Gibson Building, Gibson Drive, Kings Hill, and you can find out and book by going to the Kent Business Radio website FSB pages and looking at the FSB events page.
The FSB launched a new report this week calling for greater investment in local and rural roads to help support UK small businesses. The report, Going the Extra Mile, Connecting Businesses and Rural Communities, found most smaller firms rely on their local roads and public transport, yet half of small businesses believe these have worsened in recent years. FSB said new combined authorities emerging out of the devolution agenda are well placed to prioritise spending on transport infrastructure.
Cool. Small Business Saturday is coming round again now. It's not until December, but Small Business Saturday applications are now open for this year's Small Business 100. It's a great opportunity to highlight your business in the lead up to Small Business Saturday, which this year will be taking place on December the 3rd. Last year, 250,000 small businesses who were FSB members gained exposure on social media and in the local press by participating in Small Business Saturday. So you can apply before the 30th of June for the chance to be on this year's list. And you do that by going to the following website, which is smallbusinesssaturdayuk.com/#smallbiz. That's smallbusinesssaturdayuk.com/#smallbiz.
So I have a workshop here, an introduction to direct marketing, data protection and customer insight. In today's market, unless you're maximising your marketing and listening to what your prospects and customers are saying, you're in trouble. So the free workshop is on the 22nd of June from 2:30 to 4:30 at the Innovation Centre in Medway. And it says our aim is to make the event as useful for you as possible. And to ensure we do, we want you to share your specific business challenges with us before the day to allow us to tailor the content to cover as much as we can in the time that we have.
Cool. Small firms call for help with energy costs. More than a third, 36% of business owners believe that providing grants to carry out energy efficient upgrades is the most important action that the government could take to help small firms reduce their energy costs. And this is according to a British Gas survey of 2,100 business owners. Only 13% of survey respondents have seen a decrease in their energy bill over the last 3 years, while 35% have seen prices increase and 37% have seen little or no change. The research also found that only 8% of business owners believe more guidance on energy efficiency would help them reduce costs, and just 4% believe finance arrangements such as low-cost loans or lease agreements would actually help them. So that tells you, doesn't it?
It does. Mm. So the pensions regulator has warned smaller employers about the financial consequences of failing to comply with escalating penalty notices, EPNs. In a recent press release, the regulator revealed that 95% of small employers subject to automatic enrolment had complied with their legal duties. However, its most recent compliance report reveals that 96 EPNs were issued by the regulator in the first 3 months of 2016, compared to just 31 between July 2012 and December 2015. EPNs are only issued to employers who fail to comply with a fixed penalty notice. If the recipient of an EPN doesn't comply with its requirements within 28 days, they'll be liable to a fine that increases daily. And for small employers with 1 to 4 employees, EPN fines increase by £50 per day, and fines for employers with between 5 and 49 employees increase at a rate of £500 per day.
Wow. That'll make your eyes smart, wouldn't it?
Commenting, Charles Council Executive Director of Automatic Enrolment warned employers that failing to act means clocking up a significant penalty.
Absolutely. There's been a review of the Enterprise Finance Guarantee Scheme, and the review has now been published. A strategic review of the Enterprise Finance Guarantee Scheme, which examines the effectiveness of EFG and its impact on small firms in the UK, has been published by the British Business Bank. EFG provides a government guarantee for loans made by lenders, enabling viable small firms to obtain funding that might otherwise be declined because they do not have an adequate track record or security. The review found that the scheme was effective, but it did recommend that there should be a wider variety of financial products and accredited lenders available under the scheme, including an asset finance variant. The review also indicated that greater awareness of EFG was needed, along with a clarification of the actual eligibility criteria. So, fairly much, it's going okay, but we need to tell more people about it, and we need to tell you how to apply, basically, which is fairly not rocket science, really, is it? Have you got any left?
Yep. Charities Act to take effect from July 2016. The Cabinet Office has published a timetable detailing when the different sections of the Charities Protection and Social Investment Act 2016 will take effect. The legislation received royal assent in March 2016, and most of its provisions will come into force later this year. From July 2016, trustees will have new statutory powers to make social investments that achieve financial returns and further their charitable purpose. A number of protective powers for the Charity Commission will also come into force, including the power to direct a charity to wind up or to not take part in a particular action. The Charity Commission is expected to publish explanatory notes on the changes in the coming weeks. That'll be fortunate then.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. That brings us to the end of our news update.
Channel Radio News Update.
I want to tell you about this. I've been sent this email, and I can't really show it to you because it's a picture, and you need to look at the picture, really. So I'm going to give you some details where you can find a picture in a minute. But it's an email from the very lovely, gorgeous, long-term supporter of the Business Bunk Show, the absolutely adorable Sally Laker, who's known as Sally for Cakes.
Yes.
And Sally has sent me an email, and she says, win a hanging handbag cake.
Ooh.
A hanging handbag cake. And it's a picture of her striding out with said cake that looks just like an Yves Saint Laurent handbag. Okay?
But it's a cake.
But it's a cake.
Ooh.
And the cake is worth £150. And she says it's a competition. And the competition closes on the 18th of June at 12 p.m. And all you have to do is guess the weight of the cake. Okay? And it's only £5 a guess. and all the money will go to www.snap.org.uk. And SNAP is a charitable organisation which helps disabled children in Kent. There's a link which is justgiving.com/winacake, and Sally has provided a lovely photograph of her walking through the town carrying the cake as a handbag.
I hope
and
she's it's abso- it too much.
It's absolutely brilliant. So the best way of finding out, and she says, yes, it really is a cake. So the best way of finding out about this is to follow Sally on the Twitter, and her Twitter handle is Sally4Cakes. So do give Sally a follow, find out about that competition, but be quick because it closes on the 18th of June, which is what, this weekend.
Yeah,
so right. do check that out. It's fabulous. Fabulous cake.
Can I tell you about a concert that I'm singing in?
Of course you can.
It's a week on Saturday, the 25th of June, Saturday, at St Leonard's Church in Hythe at 7:30, and we're singing, it's the Folks and Choral Society, with two pianos and a harmonium. And I don't know if that means and an organ or...
I wonder what you were going to say there. Do you remember, I can't remember what programme it was on. There used to be an outfit called Two Puffs and a Piano.
Yes.
I thought you were going to say that. And yes. What was that on? I can't remember. Was it the Graham Norton show or something? Yes. Yeah.
So we have two pianos. Right. And we're singing two pianos and Rossini's Petite Messe Solennelle. And it's very rousing and will be lovely in the church with the acoustic. Mm. And it's £12 a ticket and it starts at 7:30. You can get tickets from Brandon's in the High Street or on the door.
Fantastic. Absolutely. We'll be there.
Yeah, right.
I know, I'm busy that
I'll
day.
I'll be there. Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to be there.
I am.
Did you notice that, chaps? Yeah. The only thing she's going to is her own event. Doesn't that tell you everything you need to know? Hey, listen, we're fast approaching the end of the show. I just want to tell you what's coming up for the rest of today on channelradio.co.uk. Shortly after this show at 4 o'clock is the lovely Natalie Benaig with a Kent Creative Live show where she explores everything there is to explore about the Kent creative scene in terms of art, photography and all kinds of things. And I believe her guest on today's show is Mark Parry, who's a photographer. So do check that out. That's the Kent Creative Live show at 4 p.m. That's followed at 5 p.m. by Mr. Craig Avery, the ladies' favourite, with his entertainment and celebrity show. That's 5 to 7 o'clock tonight. Mr. Craig Avery, The Craig Avery Show, the ladies' favourite, stripy socks and all. And then at 7 o'clock we have...
Welcome all to the New Potatoes Show.
At 7 p.m, Jamie Andrews with the New Potato Show, 18 tracks of unsigned, new, up-and-coming music from the unsigned music community. 18 tracks of fabulous, awesome, gloriously hand-picked music for your delight and pleasure. And following the New Potato Show at 9 o'clock, we have our comedy, music and entertainment show, I Was Lord Kitchener's Valet, focusing on that hugely, hugely funny year, 1967. Which was a hilarious year in the calendar, apparently. What do you reckon?
I don't know.
Apparently it was funny. I don't know why it was funny.
I wasn't born, so I wouldn't know.
Oh, don't give me that. Come on. Okay. So that's I Was Lord Kitchener's Valet. That is on at 9 o'clock. And then, of course, as always on a Tuesday evening, we round off with...
It's Club Culture with Boy George.
One, two, three, get down!
Cool drum beat at the squidgy bass, I give you Vanilla Ace, and it rhymes. That means I'm right on time. Welcome to Club Culture, where I control my very own dance universe. 1 hour or more of grooving delectables for your disco pleasure. I'm Boy George.
It's 1 hour of delectable, delicious dance music. It's Club Culture with Boy George on Channel Radio.
So as always, on a Tuesday, we round out Tuesday evening with the Club Culture Show with the fabulous Boy George. And I'd just like to say, George, happy birthday, mate. It's Boy George's birthday today. A glorious 55. Happy birthday, George.
Oh, I didn't know.
What's the matter?
I thought his was something like the 10th or something. It's the 14th. Oh, wow, there you go.
There you go.
Happy birthday, Boy George.
Yeah, happy birthday, George.
I knew it's Gemini, because all the best people are, of course.
Two-faced. No, it's just Gemini, isn't it? Isn't it too
interesting?
Yeah.
You know, varied.
No, I wasn't making a comment.
I'm just using different words.
I was just describing the symbol, is what I was doing.
The twins, I think, is what you
Oh, that's said. What I was looking for. Yeah. Anyway, happy birthday, George. Hope you have a fabulous day, and do listen into George's show tonight at 10 o'clock. But, you know, we've reached the end of the show. Thank you so much for joining Joe and I on the Business Bunker Show. A massive, massive thank you to today's show sponsors, Fruitworks.co over there in Canterbury, and to our two brilliant, brilliant guests, Mr. Andy Davis of Why Not Fix and Mr. Daniel San Giuseppe of Castlewood Hotels. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show. It's been an absolute pleasure. We will be back with you next Tuesday. Have a fabulous week, everybody, and we will see you all soon. Bye-bye.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.